Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome back to News and Views. I'm Rob Schofield. Advocates for reproductive freedom have been telling us for decades that the reversal of Roe v. Wade would bring about a health care disaster for women across the United States. And in recent weeks, this tragic situation has already started to materialize. Recently, in an effort to learn more about the kinds of repressive and harmful laws that are starting to take effect and what it could mean for women in the impacted states, I sat down with an expert who's watched these kinds of laws be enforced in several other nations around the world for years. Gina Dillon is the policy and advocacy manager for the triangle-based global reproductive health organization IPAS, and as she told me, American backsliding on abortion rights comes at a time when most of the rest of the world is moving in the opposite direction.
Well, Gina Dillon, welcome to News and Views. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Obviously, it's a challenging time. For many years, IPAS has worked around the globe to liberate women from repressive laws and practices that prevent them from controlling their own bodies and futures. And now, sadly, with the U.S. Supreme Court's recent decision overturning a half century of precedent by reversing the Roe v. Wade ruling, our home country has sort of joined this list of repressive nations. Talk to us about what are your thoughts on the end of Roe and what it means for Americans.
It's a tragedy. We're really, in grief, obviously, about this. And from our perspective, we are a global NGO working around the world to address access and rights to abortion. And this decision is really out of step with much of the rest of the world. Since the year 2000, we've seen almost 40 countries legalize or expand abortion access and rights. We've seen the green wave in Latin America really move us towards decriminalizing abortion in some of the most restrictive settings in the world. So we're seeing progress around the world and global feminist movements really demanding access and abortion rights. And so this decision and everything that's happening here in this country, it's sad. And we do know that this will have an impact globally. We know that the anti-abortion, anti-rights movement, they're anti-abortion. They also happen to be anti-LGBTQ, anti-women, anti-democracy. They see this as a major victory, and they're poised to use this ruling to kind of amplify their dangerous message. And, our country leaders around the world are concerned about that, because in some of the places where we work, progress has been slow, but it has been in the direction of expanding access and decriminalizing abortion. But this will embolden anti-rights actors, anti-abortion activists to take steps, to be more vocal, to put more pressure on their governments, pointing to the U.S. as an example of that.
It's sadly a trend we see whenever the United States takes steps backwards. It seems to spread like a unhealthy virus around the world. Talk to us about some of the repressive policies you've been overcoming in recent years in other countries. As you said, there's been some real progress, even in Latin America, overcoming criminalization of abortion. But there are still some countries in which there are some enormously repressive, frightening policies that are pursued that one, supposes and fears could be in the offing in our country as well.
Yeah, a lot of the abortion laws that guide the frameworks where we work have actually been in place for decades. They're kind of old relics of colonial laws that just haven't been taken off the books. For example, Malawi, this is a country, a small country where we've had a presence for over a decade, and it has one of the world's highest maternal death rates. Unsafe abortion is a leading cause. Abortion is highly restricted in Malawi. They have kind of a colonial era law still in place, and it only allows abortion where the pregnant person's life is in danger. And advocates have been working for years and making strides really to expand the law, to make it more progressive. The Law Commission has really put forward a revised law that would expand the grounds. It's not perfect, but it's an improvement. And our leadership there, the opposition, have been very present, and we are concerned and seeing signs that this decision really can be used to put pressure on the Malawi government and kind of undermine decades of work that we've done to improve political will and support, to work in communities to kind of build social support and increase access to care. And so we're, really concerned about what this could do, and that this really could put pressure on the government to bury the bill. And millions of women and girls in Malawi just can't afford for this to happen.
The implications for maternal health seem to be enormous. I've seen statistics recently that even now in the United States, that in parts of our country in which reproductive freedom, access to abortion is more readily available, where we have better sex education, where we have better programs for providing health care to women, maternal health does much better. And in states where we have more repressive laws, and presumably that's going to get worse, the implications for maternal health are really significant. I mean, we're going to see real huge divides in death rates, right, amongst pregnant women in our country.
Yeah, and we're going to see a real disproportionate impact here because, and this is true everywhere, that the decision to have an abortion doesn't change because the law says you can't have one, right? So people who have the resources and the means and who can travel, they can afford to travel, they will find their way to an abortion. Abortion with pills is widely available in this country, and it will become something of an opportunity for people to get the care that they need. But we're going to see people who can't afford to travel, who can't get time off work or transportation, that this really is going to have a disproportionate impact. We already have incredible maternal health disparities and disproportionate access to care. That's going to get worse. And, you know, not being able to make this very basic decision about your body, having forced pregnancies, criminalization of pregnancy outcomes, all of these things are going to be happening. And, you know, it's a reality that we see in our global work. And it's just the reality that is coming to the U.S. In the coming months, years. It's already here in some states.
We're talking with Gina Dillon of the North Carolina-based global reproductive rights organization, IPAS, about the Dobbs decision, which reversed 50 years of precedent in the United States on abortion rights. We published a story recently from Wisconsin in which experts opined that we could now actually see the phenomenon in the United States of law enforcement investigating miscarriages. We have a huge proportion of pregnancies, of course, end in miscarriages. And there's some speculation that law enforcement could actually get in some jurisdictions in the business of trying to investigate and interrogating women about their miscarriages as to whether it was, might have conceivably been an abortion in a state where abortion has been criminalized. Is this something really that could be possible? Have we ever seen that in other parts of the world?
Oh, absolutely. People around the world are turned into police whenever they seek abortion care, but also, you know, when people believe that maybe they've had an abortion. So this certainly happens. We're also, you know, I read an article recently from Alabama about providers who felt like they couldn't provide miscarriage management care because they were concerned that it would cause criminal investigations into themselves. So it's not just the people seeking abortion care. Providers are going to be extremely chilled from providing not just, you know, safe terminations, but miscarriage management. And that is a huge concern. Digital privacy has been, you know, I've seen a lot of articles about this as well, that people are concerned about location tracking and being able to, with period tracking apps, that people may be targeted in that way. These are all concerns, and I think rightly so, because particularly with the Texas law that went into effect, we saw an unprecedented level of sort of vigilante justice built into that legislation. It's one thing to criminalize abortion, but to set your fellow citizens against each other in this way, it's really on another level. And, you know, people are right to be concerned about this. And, you know, it really is the time to speak out and to really say that this is not okay. And we must make a change about this because it, you know, it will get worse before it gets better, unfortunately.
Sounds like out of some sort of dystopian science fiction novel that we're actually, sadly and tragically, it's a reality that could be confronting our country. Abortion remains a legal option in 27 states, including North Carolina, though somewhat tenuously. We seem to be, as long as Governor Roy Cooper is in office, it appears that he certainly has committed to vetoing any anti-choice legislation the General Assembly could pass. But we might see the nature of the General Assembly could change as soon as this November if Republicans regain a supermajority. But is it safe to say that North Carolina, being adjacent to an array of southeastern states that have banned abortion or could soon ban abortion, is likely to be a sanctuary for at least for the time being?
It's already been sort of a haven state for many because simply the sort of social stigma has been enough reason for some people to come out of state to get their care. But we are hearing reports from local abortion providers who are seeing an incredible uptick in the number of people crossing, particularly from South Carolina to North Carolina to have their procedure. So that will happen. And like you said, this is such a political issue. We, as North Carolina, we're one election away from potentially a complete backsliding. So, you know, abortion is healthcare. It's worth repeating as many times as we need to remember that this is healthcare. Treatment for a miscarriage looks very similar to treatment for termination of pregnancy. So to regulate and to criminalize a healthcare procedure, it's a shock. And we can't allow that anymore. We can't allow healthcare to be determined by an election. And so, you know, our work globally, really, we are trying to depoliticize abortion care. It's incredibly challenging because it is such a political issue, unfortunately. But that's the goal. And the more we orient ourselves to seeing that this is healthcare, this is a personal decision, people feel differently about it. But at the end of the day, people need healthcare for their own health and well-being. And we can't deny that. That's denying their right to health and well-being. I see the movement here in North Carolina is strong and is not going to give up on keeping North Carolina as a safe haven, but it will require a real sustained effort and engagement beyond the politics of this, that we just have to get on the same page as a state, as a country, that this is basic healthcare.
We're coming to the end of our time with Gina Dillon of the North Carolina-based global reproductive rights organization, IPASS. Gina, how can people join the effort to promote reproductive freedom? Can they support IPASS? How would you recommend that people get involved to do this incredibly important work if they're not already?
First and foremost, I think talk to your family, to your community, have conversations that maybe you've been sort of avoiding in the past, because this issue, when it is siloed, when it is stigmatized and sort of left to the side, that's when it becomes susceptible to politicization and sort of being siloed out for criminal sanction. So talk to people about it. I think the biggest priority right now in terms of, you know, your dollars and how they can help is really providing support to local abortion funds and abortion support networks. So there is the Carolina Abortion Fund here in North Carolina. There are advocates like Pro-Choice North Carolina. There's Lillian's List Foundation, which is working to protect and ensure that candidates for public office understand this issue and understand that this is healthcare and something that we don't need to regulate in this way. So support your local organizations, you know, stay connected to the movement, to, you know, sort of the public narrative and the discourse, and, you know, plug in where you can. That's the most important thing right now. And certainly staying connected with groups like IPASS to learn about what's happening in other countries, where we can kind of join forces to really have a global feminist movement. I think that is our priority right now, is to support that. So you can plug in with IPASS, follow us on our social media.
And check out their website at IPASS.org. Gina Dillon of IPASS, thanks so much for joining us. Please stay safe. Keep up the incredibly important work you're engaged in. Keep your spirit up. And hopefully the next time we talk, we can talk about some regained progress for this important movement.
Yeah, absolutely.
Coming up next, we'll talk to a pair of advocates who are trying to combat what they say is a predatory industry that preys upon innocent people caught up in the criminal justice system. Stay with us.